Imagine for a second, shrinking a computer's brain down to the size of like a few molecules.
Right, which is almost impossible to picture.
Yeah, exactly. Now
Yeah.
imagine taking that microscopic, staggering amount of power, sliding it right into your pocket, and charging you $900 for the privilege.
Quite the premium.
It really is. So today we're looking at this relentless pursuit of the premium because across the board right now, technology, digital entertainment, they're all pushing these crazy boundaries and fighting tooth and nail for higher quality.
Always happening everywhere.
Right. So we are digging into everything from microscopic smartphone chips to gigantic artificial intelligence brains, all the way down to the digital battlefields where we actually play our video games. And to guide us, we're pulling from a huge stack of notes and articles from the Tekken Morning Friday newsletter.
Yeah, specifically their dispatch from July 17th, 2026.
Spot on. So, for everyone listening, welcome to the deep dive. Okay, let's unpack this, starting with what has to be an absolute logistical nightmare for one of the biggest tech companies on Earth.
Oh, you mean the leak?
Oh, yeah, the leak.
I mean, it is always fascinating when the curtain gets pulled back by accident, rather than through some highly choreographed press event.
Which is exactly what happened here with Google. They had their big Made by Google event scheduled for August 12. Perfect timing, highly controlled.
And then Amazon just ruins the surprise.
Amazon US literally just publishes the full product listings weeks early. And like IGN and Tom's Guide, they grabbed all the screenshots before Amazon could pull them down. So now we have the unvarnished specs for the upcoming Google Pixel 11.
When looking at those specs, the pricing strategy they're going with is really aggressive.
Oh, totally. The base model for the Pixel 11 is launching at $899.
Wow.
Yeah, that is a full $100 jump from the Pixel 10.
It signals a complete shift in how they view their own hardware, I think.
I mean, to justify it, Google has completely killed off the 128 gigabyte storage option. It is totally dead.
Which, let's be honest, it's about time.
Right. The base model is now 256 gigabytes. And if you think about it, 128 gigabytes has been functionally obsolete for a while now.
Oh, easily. I mean,
Yeah.
between the operating system eating up, what, 20 gigs right out of the box?
Yeah, East.
And then apps continuously ballooning in size, plus all that 4K video people shoot. 128 gigs essentially means you're out of space in like 6 months.
Exactly. So moving the floor to 256 makes total sense for a premium device. They've also slightly bumped up the battery to 4,985 milliamp hours, and they revamped the aesthetics too.
The colors, right?
Yeah, they're ditching the old snow and say, the white and light green,
Right.
and they're bringing in midnight black, a really bold pink they're calling fuchsia,
Yeah.
and the striking light green they're calling moss or pistachio.
The color choices are an interesting psychological play, honestly. It's like they're trying to capture both that bold younger demographic and the traditionalist at the same time. But honestly, the price point is the actual story here.
It is, because at $899, it's like Google is kicking the Pixel out of the comfortable mid-range suburbs and moving it right into the ultra-expensive downtown penthouse.
Right, they want to compete directly with the iPhone 18 Pro and the Galaxy S26.
Precisely. They're asking you to pay a premium, but they are attempting to back it up with a major technological leap.
Yeah, and what's fascinating here is what is actually powering this device. Because the real game changer isn't the storage or the colors, it's the silicon.
The chip.
Exactly. The Pixel 11 is going to be the world's first phone to use a 2-nanometer mobile chip.
And I mean, I feel like we hear these nanometer numbers thrown around so much in tech that they almost lose their meaning.
They just become marketing buzzwords to most people.
Right. But the physical reality of a 2-nanometer chip is it's almost hard to comprehend. We're talking about transistors that have been shrunk down to roughly the size of a few molecules.
Precisely. To put that in perspective for you, a single strand of human hair is about 80,000 to 100,000 nanometers wide.
That is just insane.
Right. The engineering required to achieve this level of miniaturization without the chip just immediately melting itself from the heat is staggering.
Oh, I bet.
I mean, foundries like TSMC and Samsung have been locked in a multi-billion dollar war for years trying to master this fabrication process. So, by actually securing a 2-nanometer chip for a commercial product, Google is leapfrogging Apple.
Which is a sentence you do not hear very often.
No, you really don't.
Because the upcoming iPhone 18, which drops in September, that's still slated to be on 3-nanometer technology.
Yeah, and the difference in the underlying physics between 3-nanometer and 2-nanometer is profound.
It's all about distance, right? Smaller chips mean the electrical current simply has less physical distance to travel.
That is the core mechanism, yeah. Less distance means less resistance. And that translates to unprecedented energy efficiency and vastly less heat generation.
And faster processing speeds, I assume.
Exactly. So even with a similar battery size to the previous generation, the Pixel 11's battery life could theoretically blow its competitors completely out of the water.
Wow.
The brain of the phone basically sips power rather than gulping it, and it's all because of the microscopic geography of the chip itself.
You know, this highlights such an incredible contrast in the tech world right now.
How do you mean?
Well, on one hand, you have the physical constraints of hardware, right? Companies are spending billions of dollars just to shrink processing power down to the molecular level so it fits in our pockets.
Right, making it as tiny as possible.
But then, the moment you look over at software, specifically artificial intelligence, the strategy is the exact opposite. Massive computing power is being scaled up to absolutely gigantic proportions.
Oh, for sure. Although, I will say, the miniaturization of hardware is ultimately what enables the massive expansion of those software models. You really can't have one without the other.
That's a great point. And that brings us to a major development from the newsletter on July 16th, 2026.
Ah, yes, the AI space.
Yeah. So a Chinese startup called Moonshot AI just stepped onto the global stage and they unveiled Kimi K3.
And this is not just some lightweight customer service chatbot.
No, not at all. It is the world's largest open source AI model. We're talking about a staggering 2.8 trillion parameters.
That number is just wild.
It really is. Plus, it has native vision capabilities to analyze images, and it boasts a 1 million token context window. And the API is actually live right now at platform.kimi.ai.
That parameter count is a monumental achievement, especially for a startup that was founded, what, just 3 years ago?
Yeah, only 3 years.
When we talk about parameters in AI, you can think of them like the neural connections or synapses in a human brain. So the more parameters a model has, the more nuanced and sophisticated its understanding of language, logic, and complex relationships can be.
Right, but I have to ask, wait, if Moonshot is basically giving away the keys to a digital Ferrari by making the model weights open source and downloadable, isn't that incredibly risky compared to OpenAI's lockdown approach?
Well, you've just hit on the defining debate in artificial intelligence right now.
Right, because, I mean, if they made just the API public, that's one thing. That's like letting people eat at your restaurant.
Yeah.
But open sourcing the actual model weights, that's like giving the public the exact recipe, all the raw ingredients, the oven temperatures, everything, so they can cook the exact same meal in their own kitchen, completely
It
unsupervised.
is. But see, the open source approach that Moonshot is taking democratizes research.
Okay, how so?
Well, independent developers, academic researchers, and especially companies in developing nations who simply cannot afford the massive API access fees charged by American tech giants, they can now download a world-class model.
Oh, I see.
They can run it on their own local servers, they can modify it, they can tinker with it.
Yeah.
By doing this, Moonshot essentially crowdsources their research and development to the entire world.
Which helps them iterate and improve far faster than they ever could in isolation.
Exactly.
But still, once those weights are downloaded, Moonshot has zero control over how they're used.
Right, that is true.
Bad actors could use a model of this magnitude to generate misinformation, deep fakes, or like malicious code at an industrial scale without any of the safety guardrails that a closed system can enforce.
That is the very real flip side of the coin. It's a huge risk. However, stepping back from the safety debate for a second, the geopolitical implications are what truly shift the landscape here.
Yeah, this puts China right at the forefront.
Exactly. Kimi K3 proves that China is not just playing catch up or, copying existing tech anymore. They are innovating right at the frontier.
Yeah.
To contextualize that 2.8 trillion number for you, OpenAI's GPT-40 sits at approximately 1.7 trillion parameters.
Wow, so a full trillion less.
Yep. And Anthropic's highly advanced Fable model is estimated to be around 2 trillion. So Moonshot is going toe-to-toe with the biggest American giants. And in terms of sheer scale, they're actually surpassing them.
The parameters are obviously huge, but the 1 million token context window, that feels like the feature that changes how we actually use these tools day to day.
Oh, absolutely.
Because just to clarify for everyone, a token is basically a piece of a word. So a million tokens is roughly 750,000 words.
Right, which means this AI can hold an immense amount of information in its working memory at one single time.
Yeah. I mean, if you consider that an average novel is around 100,000 words, You could feed this AI seven entire books at
All
once.
in one prompt.
Exactly.
Right.
Or if you're a developer, it means the AI can absorb your entire massive code base without forgetting what line one said by the time it reaches line 100,000.
Yeah, that unbroken continuity changes the game entirely for deep reasoning and high-level knowledge work.
Definitely.
But of course, the sheer amount of money and processing power required to train an AI model of this size is staggering.
It has to be astronomical.
And that immense financial pressure to deliver a massive return on investment, something we are seeing bleed over into digital entertainment as well.
Oh, perfectly said. Yeah, the budgets for AAA video games have ballooned so much over the last decade that studios are being forced to take really significant creative swings just to guarantee they stand out in the market.
They can't just play it safe anymore.
Right. Which brings us to the PlayStation 5. So, Insomniac Games just dropped a brand new cinematic trailer for Marvel's Wolverine.
A highly anticipated one, too.
Huge. The trailer is titled Ain't No Hero, and it actually gives us a firm release date of September 15th, 2026.
Huh?
Oh, and a quick note for the physical media collectors out there.
Good news, I assume.
Very good news. It is getting a physical disc release, keeping that tradition alive despite the industry's heavy push toward digital-only ecosystems.
That physical release is a small, but honestly vital, victory for game preservation. It ensures players actually own the media they purchase.
Absolutely. So, looking at the trailer, it introduces the main villain, Lady Deathstrike, also known as Yuriko Oyama.
Yes.
And we see her in this brilliant mix of traditional Japanese armor infused with modern cybernetics, wielding her own adamantium claws. But here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay, wait on me.
Insomniac is the studio that built the wildly successful, optimistic, bright world of the recent Spider-Man games.
Right, very colorful, very upbeat.
Exactly. So, transitioning from the friendly neighborhood Peter Parker to this dark, bloody 100-year-old anti-hero who was carrying the trauma of countless wars. That is a massive tonal shift for the studio.
A complete 180.
And they are leaning all the way in. They're promising a completely uncensored, mature rating.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it represents a really significant evolution in how major studios approach superhero narratives in gaming.
How so?
Well, Insomniac understands that you cannot simply reskin the Spider-Man mechanics with claws and call it a day.
Right. Wolverine doesn't swing from webs, he brawls.
Exactly. The narrative approach has to fundamentally shift to match the psychology of the character. And that is why the inclusion of Lady Deathstrike as the primary antagonist is so telling here.
Because she is so deeply tied to Wolverine's own trauma.
Exactly. Yuriko Oyama's motivations are incredibly complex. In the lore, her father played a pivotal role in creating the very adamantium metal that is grafted to Wolverine's bones.
Right, it's very personal.
Very personal. She operates out of a twisted but genuine sense of samurai duty and honor, seeking revenge against Logan for what she perceives as his responsibility in her father's death.
Wow, okay.
And, the best villains, the ones that elevate a story from a simple brawl to true narrative maturity, they possess motivations you can actually understand.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Even if you completely reject her violent methods, you can empathize with a daughter seeking justice for her family. Pairing that kind of narrative depth with an uncensored, mature combat system shows Insomniac is really building a premium adult experience.
I can't wait to play it. But, that level of premium development requires a massive budget, state-of-the-art physics engines, hundreds of developers.
It's an immense undertaking.
Right. And it can make it seem like the only way to innovate in gaming is by spending hundreds of millions of dollars. But the sources highlight a completely different movement happening simultaneously.
The indie scene.
Yes. The indie gaming scene is having a full-on rebellion against hyper-realism right now.
I love seeing this because when you remove the pressure of a massive AAA budget, developers are free to experiment with sheer creativity and just, well, controlled chaos.
Exactly. Sometimes you don't need ray trace lighting and 4K textures. Sometimes you just need a hilarious concept.
Right.
Take Pro Jank Footy, which is launching on August 12th from Powerbomb Games and Tinkertown. It is an arcade-style take on Australian rules football.
Which is already a wild sport to begin with.
Right. AFL is already a chaotic mix of soccer, rugby, and basketball. But this game throws any pretense of realism totally out the window.
Okay, so what do you actually do?
Well, you have 18-player teams, an animated trailer by the famously weird Australian animator Michael Cusack, and over 150 different power-ups.
150.
Yeah, We are talking about flaming balls, giant players, and literal wild animals just running onto the pitch to disrupt the game.
That is the complete antithesis of the hyper-realistic, often sterile sports simulators that completely dominate the market right now.
Oh, totally.
And it targets a completely different psychological need for the player, honestly.
And the same goes for another game mentioned in the dispatch, Goblin Cleanup.
Oh, this one sounds so good.
It was just announced for a 2027 release on the upcoming Nintendo Switch 2, as well as PS5 and Xbox. The premise is so clever.
Go ahead, explain it for them.
Usually in a fantasy game, you play the hero, right? You're kicking down the dungeon door, slaying monsters, taking the loot. But in this game, you and up to three friends play cooperatively as the goblin janitors who are tasked with coming in after the heroes have left.
You literally have to clean up the mess.
Well, you have to clean up the mess. Goblin Cleanup is basically like playing Overcooked, but instead of accidentally burning a pot of tomato soup because your friend didn't chop the onions fast enough, you're frantically mopping up a medieval crime scene.
That is brilliant.
You are hauling away monster corpses, trying to reset deadly traps before the clock runs out, all while yelling at your friends for tracking blood across the floor you literally just mopped.
Both Goblin Cleanup and Pro Jank Footy perfectly illustrate why the party game genre is absolutely thriving right now.
Yeah, why do you think that is?
Because these developers know they cannot afford to build photorealistic graphics, right? So instead, the design mechanics specifically engineered to cause communication breakdowns between players in the same room.
Yes.
The fun isn't in mastering the mechanics. The fun is in the chaotic failure. When a wild animal interrupts your pass in Pro Jank Footy, or your friend accidentally triggers a spike trap in Goblin Cleanup while holding a bucket of dirty water, it creates a unique shared moment of hilarity that a highly scripted AAA game simply cannot replicate.
That's so true. And from an industry standpoint, the fact that Goblin Cleanup is already announced for the Nintendo Switch 2,
yeah,
that's a really strong indicator of the market's health.
Oh, definitely.
It shows that indie developers have a lot of trust in Nintendo's next generation hardware ecosystem, and they're ready to support that platform right out of the gate.
Yeah, they're not waiting to see if it succeeds first.
Right. But, you know, whether a studio is building a chaotic goblin janitor simulator, or writing a mature superhero narrative, or training a trillion parameter AI, or engineering a molecular phone chip, reaching that premium level of quality demands one critical resource.
Time.
Yep.
It is the one variable you just cannot fake, and it's the one resource developers are constantly fighting their publishers for.
Which perfectly frames our last major story today. PlaySide Studios has officially announced that their highly anticipated real-time strategy game, Game of Thrones, War for Westeros, is being delayed.
Another delay.
Yeah, it was originally slated for 2026, but they're pushing it back to early 2027 for PC, PS5, and Xbox Series X and S. And their statement explicitly noted that the delay is to ensure high quality and to avoid the technical issues that have plagued other major launches recently.
Well, this raises an important question about the current culture of the industry and what we have come to know as the Cyberpunk 2077 effect.
Oh man, the ultimate cautionary tale for rushing a release.
Exactly. The industry learned brutal, very public lessons from games like Cyberpunk 2077, Anthem, and Battlefield 2042.
Rough launches.
Very rough. In the past, pressure from publishers to hit a specific financial quarter led to games being released in fundamentally broken states.
Right.
The consumer backlash was immense, and the brand damage took years to repair. What the industry has finally internalized is this. A delayed game will eventually come out, and the wait will be forgiven if the game is good.
Right.
But a rushed, broken game's reputation is permanently damaged the second it launches.
Because first impressions are everything, especially in a genre as unforgiving as real-time strategy.
RTS games are uniquely difficult to build because they require microscopic balancing.
What do you mean by that?
Well, in War for Westeros, players are controlling radically different asymmetrical factions, right?
Mm.
The Starks, the Lannisters, the Targaryens.
Right, they don't all play the same way.
Exactly. So if one specific archer unit for the Lannisters is slightly too cheap to produce, or one Stark special ability is slightly too powerful,
yeah,
it breaks the entire competitive ecosystem of the game.
Wow, it's that fragile.
Oh, yeah. A 40-minute match can be completely ruined by a single unbalanced mechanic. Finding that perfect equilibrium takes thousands and thousands of hours of playtesting.
And you layer that mechanical pressure on top of the narrative pressure, too, because they have to remain strictly faithful to the deep beloved lore of HBO's Game of Thrones universe, collaborating with the original writers to ensure authenticity.
It is a monumental task.
It really is. So what does this all mean for you, the listener? Well, while seeing a game you are super excited about get delayed can feel disappointing in the moment, looking at the big picture, this is actually a massive win for consumers.
Absolutely.
It proves that studios like PlaySide are shifting away from short-term profit chasing. They are finally prioritizing the player's actual experience over rushing a product out the door just to satisfy a quarterly earnings report.
It is a pivot toward long-term brand building. They're recognizing that quality over speed is the only sustainable business model in today's highly critical market.
Spot on. And that brings us full circle on this pursuit of the premium we've been tracking today.
We really covered a lot of ground.
We did. We've gone from the molecular physics of Google's 2-nanometer Pixel 11 processors to the staggering scale of Moonshot's 2.8 trillion parameter open source AI brain.
Right.
We've explored how PlayStation is embracing dark, complex narratives with Wolverine, while indie devs are finding brilliant success by leaning into chaotic party mechanics with Projank Footy and Goblin Cleanup.
And through it all, we see studios learning the hard lessons and taking the necessary time to get complex experiences exactly right.
Exactly.
You know, it is a phenomenal time to be following the intersection of technology and entertainment.
Mm.
But looking at all these threads together, there's one final, rather provocative thought that emerges when you connect the dots here.
Oh, what are you thinking?
Well, consider this. We just discussed how a massive open source AI model like Kimi K3 has a 1 million token context window, right?
Right.
Meaning it can already process millions of lines of complex code and reason deeply through intricate problems in a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, we see human studios like PlaySide struggling with the sheer amount of time, years of intense manual labor required to perfectly balance the complex asymmetric mechanics of an RTS game.
Okay, I see where you're going with it.
Right. If these open source AI models are scaling this quickly and their reasoning capabilities are becoming this profound, how long is it until the AI models are the ones doing those thousands of hours of playtesting?
Oh, wow.
How long until they're the ones writing the code and entirely balancing these complex video games for us in a matter of days, while the human developers simply sit back, write the prompts, and act more as the directors of the game rather than the manual laborers?
Man, that is a wild yet entirely plausible future to imagine.
It really is.
The lines between the creator and the tool are definitely blurring, and the definition of what makes something premium is going to change right along with it.
Without a doubt.
Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the sources, everyone. We really hope it gave you some great insights and plenty to think about. Have a fantastic rest of your day, and we will catch you next time.